Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The presenting sponsor of the City of Smack podcast is On. Experience the magic of the Penn Relays with On. Races, athletes, new kits, new faces. Try the latest On running shoe innovations, customize your gear, and more. For the full event schedule, keep tabs on the Penn Relays website. And if you can't be there in person, follow On Instagram for all of the action. The City of Smack team will be in Philadelphia at Franklin Field for that weekend slate of races. We're so excited. Thanks to On for supporting City of Smack. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the City of Smack podcast. I'm Chris Chavez, and this is my show where I get the chance to chat with some of the biggest names on the track, on the roads, within the coaching ranks, and across the running industry. Before we hit our interview, we love giving the listeners a shout out when they leave a review for us. If you want yours to be read, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and let us know why you love this show. This week's review comes to us from Spare Threads, who wrote, "Sending thanks to the city's team for all your hard work and enthusiasm for all things running. I appreciate all your coverage, the long-form interviews, and the race discussions and recaps. You bring a lot of joy to this listener's ears during my workday and or commute. Keep it up. Thanks especially for spotlighting athletes who don't get a lot of media attention like Hillary Bohr and Elkanah Kibet. And please, more cross-country hype." Ask and you shall receive, Spare Threads. We've got a full reading of the Lap Count newsletter that touches on all things that went down at the World Cross Country Championships and what to look forward to before they come to America in 2026 in Tallahassee. Thanks again for the review.
Backfleet here, taking over for this episode. I just took a trip out to Boulder, Colorado to visit with the OAC. Stay tuned for some videos that we'll have coming your way in the lead up to Penn Relays. My guest for this episode is Australian Olympian Ollie Hoare. He unfortunately had to miss last year's World Championships with a sports hernia and some swelling in the groin area. After some time off and some heavy cross training, he has rejoined his OAC teammates for workouts and will race for the first time this weekend at the Australian National Championships. We talk about the comeback process, the evolution of OAC, and more. Without further ado, here's Ollie Hoare. All right, welcome to the City of Smack podcast. I am Mac Fleet, joined by OAC's Ollie Hoare. Ollie, how are we doing?
We're good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How are we feeling after that workout this morning?
Yeah, it felt pretty good, actually. Day thing kind of ran off. I didn't get to get the TLC afterwards, but me and Yard felt pretty happy about it. So it's in a good, we're in a good place right now.
It's talking to everyone today, it's a little bit of a team consensus that sometimes Yard falls off the back a little bit on some threshold or easy run stuff.
Yeah, he's not a fan of threshold, Yard. He can definitely do it. He's definitely fit enough to do it, but I respect the game of not enjoying it and then getting into the faster, quicker stuff. You can watch him. He probably has the same cadence when he runs a 56 that he does running a 74.
So as I say, he looked very bored.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was bored out there, so we were trying to have a chat. We're trying to keep spice it up. But he was excited to have me back.
He's 10 feet behind you.
Yeah. Well, he kind of got annoyed, but because I started running the actual pace of the reps that were prescribed, and he was annoyed about that. But I got to try and, you know, catch up here. So,
all right. it was fun to watch. All right, so you had a good workout this morning. We're 2 weeks away from Australian Championships. Where are we in this comeback?
We're in a good spot. It's interesting because my last race, like I was talking about today, my last race was in Oslo. It was probably the fastest 1500 of my career, one of the best races of my career, but I was so upset, cause I knew I was pretty injured. And I think from that reflection of like, I had this mentality of like, oh, I'll be fine. I can run through anything. I'd never been injured in my career. And then dealing with like a very serious injury definitely gave me a lot of good reflection, but it also showed me different aspects of the team that I'm currently in. A lot of the athletes here have dealt with injuries like that. So hearing their experiences as well as their support throughout like a difficult journey that I just started from Oslo was very comforting. but I knew it was going to be a challenge. So then getting to where I am now, I did deal with another injury coming back a bit too hard, a bit too fast. My swimming, thankfully, got me in a really good shape, but my legs were not there. But yeah, I'm in a really good place right now. I'd say like I'm 85%. I would say 85% is like, I think, a good number. But like 100% for me is like, and I'm sure Yared and Mario and all the other teammates and George would say 100% is when you go out and you win against the best in the world. So 85% for me is in a good place. So I feel like right now I'm definitely in the best possible position going into my Australian champs.
You were talking about your teammates' experience with injuries. Has Dathan given any sort of advice, given his own history with injuries throughout his career?
He definitely told me it was going to be much more of a mental battle than a physical one. The crazy thing for me personally was when I posted about it on social media, it was difficult. I was like literally leaving the next day after having the MRI, after like not running London Diamond League. And I got messages from Will Lear, Nick Willis, a lot of runners that I look up to, saying that they've had similar injuries or similar situations. And then they've had these results afterwards. Like, you just have to trust that there's a journey then and a process for it. So that was very comforting to have, having George, particularly at that time, we were rooming together and we shared an emotional goodbye, and George then went to get fifth at Worlds. So it was a pretty special moment to see like his journey with it, because when I popped off with the OAC, I remember I ran New York and I ran 3:32. George had a sacral issue, and then I got a sacral issue later. But the funny ways of the journeys of the sport, where George is now in probably one of the best shapes he's been in. He's got consistent training in. He's now definitely proving his mark on the world. And I feel like it's cool to see those journeys in different places. So for me, it's just about, this is my journey of learning through the injury. So it was a tough pill to swallow, but the support there from Dathan as well, saying, you need a mental break. You're going home to Australia. You're going to cross train there. And you're going to try not to watch too much track, but just get back into getting your body to heal, to recover, and then we're going to get you back to going to where you should be. So he was great with that, and definitely with the mental side of it, because I think the physical thing wasn't that difficult. It's like you can't do anything, it's out of your control. But the mental aspect is it's sitting in the back of your head, and you know, watching Josh Kerr win Worlds is never fun when you've beaten him, and as well as Jake. But like it's great to see like people's journeys in the sport and where they end up and what they do, because it's not as consistent as people think, which is a cool thing.
George was talking about, 2 years ago, he thought he was going to make this leap, and it just didn't happen, had some injuries. And, you know, he's at where he is now. He just won Indoor Worlds. How, from you as like a spectator, a teammate, how enjoyable was that watching?
It's just so satisfying. It's like reading a good book, you know, and you get to the climax and you don't know what's going to happen next, and you try not to cheat and look at the next page. But Morgan and I have had a lot of discussions about it, and we kind of called it. We didn't want to say it too much to put pressure on him, because we weren't sure he was going to listen to that podcast, but we were definitely thinking like this could be the race, just to see how George has progressed, not just as an athlete, but as a person. I think the relationship of running is hard in a way, when it's your whole life and you try and put into it as much as you can in a finite amount of time. There are so many other things you could be doing. There's so many other experiences you could be experiencing, and you see it all around you. But to be able to be focused, to be kind of Buddhist with recovery, with eating right, with doing little things, looking after your body, like George ticks all those boxes, and he's done that for not just months, but he's done it for years. And I think particularly with the training I've seen him do and like the relationship we've had, it's a very sweet moment, because George has been there for my highs, which it was a bit of a sad thing for me, because I wanted to be there,
right,
and experience it, even though he would have beaten me, obviously, because he would have won. but he was there for my highs. When I won Comm Games, he was there after my disappointment at Eugene. He was there for like a lot of my top races. But just seeing that, it felt like the ending of Good Will Hunting with Robin Williams. The son of a bitch, he stole my line. It would kind of feel like that. I like watched it. I wasn't surprised. It wasn't like throwing things in the air and screaming. It was more like just like, yeah, I just knew. And Morgan was the same. We got to practice like that afternoon. We had actually a hard workout. And Morgan, I looked at each other and he goes, "Do you know that George just won world champs?" He's like, "Oh yeah, I didn't really know that." Yeah. And we were dicking around with it at practice. So it's nice to see that hard work pay off. And Geordie's had probably the longest journey on the team as an OG with dealing with the adversity. And it just shows you that if you're if you keep putting the garlic bread in the oven, you're going to get a good result. So, and he's been doing that for years. So I'm very, very proud of him. And this is just the beginning.
I was joking with him that his classic Geordi finish.
Textbook George.
Yeah, textbook George. Sorry. Yeah. He's completely validated it. Yeah. No one can tell him to stop doing that anymore.
No, even if
it frustrates Dathan or anybody else. He's a world champion.
He's a world champion from it. I mean, like, his parents get frustrated with it. I mean, I know I talked to his dad, Simon, and he just says, I can't do a Kiwi accent. I'm not going to do it. But he's like, why can't George just run? Like, he obviously can run and win races. Why can't he just do it and not give us heart attacks and panic attacks? And it's like, I mean, if you ever speak to George about sport, George is not a big fan of time trials. He's not a big fan of running from the front. He's a fan of excitement, of showmanship. And you watch those races at Penn. You watch a lot of the races, and particularly an interesting one at NCAA Champs in the mile indoors. Those races are all about, like, just pure excitement and obviously measuring yourself well in a race. George is a perfectionist at that. And it was interesting because Jared was also very excited to see George win that because he did not want another American having a world championship before him. So having George win that as a teammate, we were all very, very excited about it.
Describe the Australian Olympic 1500 meter picture right now. I've asked Morgan about, you know, the surge of Australian running right now and sort of how special that whole thing is. But describe just the 1500 meter picture right now and sort of where are you in the mix of it as of, I guess, today? Because, like, knowing the Australian selection process, it might be different in weeks, months.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting situation for sure. I mean, like, a couple of years ago, if I had run as well as I have, even with that injury, 3:29 Australian record, Commonwealth Games champ, although that kind of resume, like, I wouldn't really have much pressure on me going into this, this national championships. Unfortunately, I don't have the standard because that race was 2 weeks before.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah, so I don't have the standard for it. I have the standard for other things, but not for that. But it is insane, but it's also very exciting for our sport. Like, you can't deny, obviously we're all selfish and we all want to win and be the best, but you can't deny how great it is for my country's sport, particularly in 1500 meter running. It's insane right now. We have a 17-year-old who's a sensation, breaking all these world records for his age groups and running 3:33. He's an incredible athlete, and he reaches out now and then. Like, he's a fan of the sport and a fan of, like, seeing what the sport has created in this type of running, because the 1500 has changed from 3:36 to being, like, kind of quick to now not being quick compared to 3:33 is a new 3:36, really. So and then you have so many other names that I'm going to forget, but Stewie is, like, pretty much my my main focus with it. He's, like, an incredible talented athlete and person. So when you race against someone that really has ticked every box, It's a very challenging thing. But I'm very confident with where I'm at, particularly since, and not to swell my head, but I did run 3:29 on an osteous pubis injury. So, like, I felt that, like, there was more for me that season, even if I was dealing with an injury. And that gives me confidence that I have the ability to execute races and run fast. And I think I'll be as competitive as I possibly can. Like, Dathan and I wouldn't go to the Australian trials, would probably get an exemption if I wasn't ready for it, because it would just hinder my process for selection. And, like, the plan is to go and win it. And if we win it, then we go and we run a couple of Diamond Leagues and we cement ourselves back to where I was, which was crazy to think about. I was a top three average performer in the Diamond League. So that was, like, something that we want to get back into. But it is going to be tough. It's going to be challenging. Like, I don't know what to expect. I've seen them, like, race a lot. I know Jai Edwards is back running well, and he's an incredible athlete. He made the Olympic team 3 years ago. And Cameron Myers, an upcoming star. Jack Anstey's been running well with UA. There's going to be names that I miss as well. But I think I'm ready for it. I think I'm excited for it. And also, I have a lot of self-hatred and anger and adrenaline kicking in for this race. And I know it's just the beginning of my season, regardless of how it goes, because I know it's not similar to selection with the US. Whereas top three, bang, you have the standard or not, you kind of go. Except for the 10K, that might be a bit weird, I guess. But with this, it's just about proving where I belong in Australian running, and I have to back myself thinking, like, I am the record holder in the event, and I should act like it and should train like it, which I feel like we've been training smart and been training well the past few months, and it's given me, I've had from little confidence to a lot of confidence in the past probably 6 weeks. So that's been exciting. And then like just going back to a national championship with Morgan, I think the last time we were in Adelaide, we were maybe 14 running cross country. And I remember watching him win that race and I got second in my age group. So it's a cool experience to be able to go back with a guy that you've seen his journey and seen my journey with it. So, but I'm ready for it.
The presenting sponsor of the Sidious Mac podcast is Olipop. You know we've been pounding Olipop for over a year now. 2023 was a track season to remember, and Sidious Mag was able to be there for all of the big moments thanks to the incredible support of Olipop. What has become known as the runner's soda isn't just a great companion for pregame shows or post-race shows, or if you're just watching at home and want to crack a can of Olipop open yourself, it's good for you too. It's a prebiotic soda with 9 grams of fiber, which is 32% of your daily needs, that only has 2 to 5 grams of sugar and helps your digestive health in a way that a threshold workout never could. We love it because there are 15 incredible flavors that will keep your body refreshed and ready to go for the next workout. My current favorite is lemon lime. Caitlin Tui's number one flavor is ginger lemon. There are other great flavors like vintage cola, tropical punch, orange squeeze, cherry vanilla, and I'm hearing rumors of another one coming soon. Sidious Mag podcast listeners get 25% off non-subscription orders by using code SIDIOUS25 at checkout at drinkolipop.com. You can also find Olipop at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Kroger, Target, Walmart, Publix, and most recently, they just got added to Costco, so pro tip there. Next time you're looking for a refreshing and healthy drink after that long run or hard workout, reach for an Olipop. You won't be disappointed. Drinkolipop.com, code SIDIOUS25.
How excited are you to race in front of that crowd?
Very excited. I love running with Aussies, and it's a rarity. I did the World Cross Champs there, and that was an incredible experience, particularly with the young kids. I feel like particularly where Australia is located geographically, we're a tough country to come and compete and race at. And Murray Plant Meet was exceptional this year as well as it was last year. We're lucky to have Fred Curley this year. We had Jake Whiteman and a few other amazing stars come in for it. But we're a very good track and field nation. And we're building it. Our field like is very strong. Nina is crushing it, as well as Kelsey and then Curtis. And then, so we want to implement a lot of good stuff on the track as well. And we have the athletes for it. So it's going to be a crazy meet. The hype around Australian distance running and mid-distance running is just continuing to build. So
yeah, I think it's one of the best fan bases in the world. Yeah. That photo last year of Curley surrounded by a thousand kids, I think was like one of the most special.
I asked him about it too, because we were getting drug tested together with Rowan Browning, who's actually went to high school with, who we ran against. And I said, Fred, what do you think? And he says, I'll be back. And I said, good. Because like those kids will remember that. And we love our sport in Australia, and swimming dominates a lot of the headlines in the news, and they're kind of the celebrities in our kind of world. But track and field's coming, and it's building, and it's becoming great. And I have to give their hats off to it, because I know George is in the room. New Zealand is also doing extremely well in track and field, as you could see by the indoor results. So the Oceania kind of environment for athletics is incredible. And to be a part of that age, I think will be cool, because if you look back on it, you'd be like, that was cool to be a part of something that's growing and something that's building that gives kids inspiration and hope that a sport that is kind of hard to stick with is possible.
Yeah. Let's talk about the 15 internationally right now. How have you seen it evolve over the last couple of years? And what have been the most, I guess, challenging things to adjust to?
Yeah. I feel like redemption is a big thing in the 1500. You look at, for me, like my kind of debut with running in the international field was during a COVID year. And I remember going into the final at the Olympics in Tokyo, and Jake Whiteman had just won the semi, and he looked incredible, and I'm thinking this guy's gonna win a medal. He doesn't. He gets 10th. And I remember that walk back, because I was disappointed in my race, and he was definitely disappointed, because I think it was like he was there, it was his moment, and he just like kind of kept saying, I don't know what we're wrong, and then goes into world champs in Eugene and wins. And then you have Kerr, didn't do great at the Commonwealth Games, kind of ran, it was always run solid at championship racing, but definitely didn't do what he wanted to do at comms. Has some issues with things that he's openly talked about. Goes and wins Budapest. Like, I think redemption's a big arc in no distance running. Well, in 1500 running in particular, I think there's a lot of athletes that keep showing up, keep turning up, and they keep changing what they can. But they also focus on the main thing is that I think with this field is that you've got to be able to run fast, but you've got to be able to kick off a fast pace. And Jakob has changed the game. And like, you have to give him credit. He's been extremely good for the sport, extremely good for the sport. And he's made us all better in our own ways. He's kind of created this environment of like, people aren't afraid to run fast. And I remember early on in my career with the 1500 domestically in the US, there were issues with a lot of Americans not going with it. And then you had Cole Hocker come through, you had Jarrod Magoos come through, Cooper Tier go through, and it's starting to now build into that momentum of like, yeah, we can do it as well. So that's a cool thing about it. But the amount of people that are good in the 1500 that could win a race is the craziest thing for me. Like, I think the Olympic final this year, regardless of who's in it, everybody in that race could win or medal. I don't think you could fully bet on someone unless they looked outright bloody amazing throughout the Diamond League season. Yeah. But my experience with it is that you just have to be able to handle the highs and lows and keep turning up, keep getting in the line. And that's what I've experienced. Like, my last 2023 year to 2022 year, like, the races that I and the people that I started to compete against, it was all kind of blurring together in the sense of not personalities, but types of races.
Mm-hmm.
There was always the same kind of race that would win a certain race. Like, I think Worlds is very similar.
Yeah.
And I think, I know Jake talked about that in commentary, but I think that's the one thing, is just keep turning up, keep learning about yourself as an athlete and believing that you can do it. So in my like little, I have a little book that I write things in. I have it in the front page, is that for me, 2024 is the year of belief. It's like, I've always been there, but I have to believe that I can do it. And if I can't do it, then you look at the next year and then the year after that, and you just keep turning up, because I've learned from athletes like Josh and Jake and Jakob and Jarrod and Mario that you're going to have bad races, but there will be a race where it will change your life. So just keep turning up.
All right. You, George, and Morgan often discuss what you'd like to see changed.
Yeah.
All right. In the sport, to make it more entertaining or whatnot. If you're made the World Athletics president tomorrow, what's the first rule you're changing?
Probably, I mean, the first rule I'm changing is I'm getting rid of a lot of, I think the sport's too diluted. I honestly think it is. I think World Cross is next week. We had World Indoors a couple of weeks ago. It makes no sense to, when you watch a lot of other sports and the trajectory of the sport, you're able to follow these stars through their journeys. And it's very separated right now with a lot of that stuff. And I don't think it's World Athletics' fault, but I think we just really haven't figured out how to kind of cultivate what we have in such a historic special event. I also know that, like, when we look at other sports, like with tennis, you have two number ones. Mm-hmm. In track, you have 24 and then 48 for male and female. So it's very hard to be able to spread the amount of financial gain, the amount of sponsorship, and also the amount of screen time for those athletes. But if you can create an environment where they prosper at the right time, I think that's possible. I 100% think that's possible. I know Chicken Boy League has been discussed a lot on the podcast. And I think, honestly, separation from distance running from track and field would be more profitable. I mean, the cycling does well in that fact. In a lot of different sports do well in that fact. Triathlon, I think, is doing a lot better than what it has been in the previous years. But I would love to see track and field stay together. I just think it would be better if they don't dilute it, but they concentrate the amount of meets they create, come some sort of way in which everyone gets a place or a special time. I think the street meets are great for field eventers. I think the road racing, like the World Road Running Championships, is a great event. I know Morgan went to that and spoke highly of it. But I would love to see more concentration on a set schedule of a year. I know World Athletics just released that they're going to do World Champs at the end of the season. And it's crazy that we're in 2024 and that's like happening now. You'd think that would have happened years ago. I also think federations need to start maybe abiding by some sort of, I mean, I surely abide by some sort of rule with World Athletics, but I'd love to see people pushed to race more. I'm not going to say who in the track and field world needs to race more, but there are a lot of people that don't, I guess they don't necessarily have to race. They can do what they want, but they can inspire a lot of young men, women, and people of color, sex, whatever it is. They can inspire a lot of people if they race and present themselves and are raw and are athletes. And I think our sport has a unique fixture of a melting pot of just amazing storylines.
I think you see with the NBA, they just implemented you have to play X amount of games in order to, I think, receive awards at the end of the season. And there were the if you're voted like first team defense, that's a huge bonus.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, I know this is very far-fetched, but I like to think like this. I think World Athletics should have a base salary for all professional athletes. I think if you're competing at a World Athletics level, continental gold or above, you have a salary. And it's they partner with something, the major partners.
Right.
And I think if you have, using the same model as drug testing, right. You're in the drug testing pool, I think you deserve some funding. And the funding doesn't have to be $1 million. It can be 20 grand or 25 grand. And I think World Athletics, if they created a good model and they sponsored not just like federations, but the athletes themselves, I think that could be a great thing. Because 25 grand for a Kenyan woman to run the 800 could go a long way, US. It could get her to meets. It could get her proper treatment, training, it prevent injury, get her PB. I think it makes sense that World Athletics should start creating maybe a way in which they could fund, like our federations, if we're lucky enough, if we're at the highest level, get some sort of funding. Sometimes you don't get it depending on how much you earn from contracts. But if World Athletics had that kind of system to pay their best athletes, I think also with the, like you said, if they compete more races and they do well in those races, they get bonuses in their contract with World Athletics. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And with that contract, you mandate people show up and race, and then you have a little bit more control over the narrative.
And then I would force volunteer work. So like a lot of, and I'm not force it, but like you're under World Athletics, let's say Athlete A is on the OAC, let's call him Athlete A, and he runs a 330 and 1500, he's made the finals and all this stuff. He's getting paid 50K a year from World Athletics, great money, but he has to do 3 volunteer works at underprivileged schools, helping with track and field stuff. Maybe does some media attention in a different Diamond League. And then he does like some sort of community work with people like volunteers and stuff. You put that in the contract, he gets paid that 50K, he gets bonuses if he runs well. And also I think he'd learn a bit about himself and enjoy that part of the community that you're associating with, because a lot of rugby players, AFL players, they do those community things. And I think they do them not because they're in their contract, but because it's easy for them to kind of access that because of their sponsors. And how they're looked after. But if you add that into a contract with World Athletics, I think we'd create a better community for running. And like running is, I mean, it's changed all our lives in this gym. So we would love to impact that on other people.
The three of you have it solved.
Yeah.
I'll say that. I mean that seriously. Like I think you guys have a very good feel for things that.
Yeah. Our game plan
to be changed.
Yeah, our game plan, Mac, is we're going to be bought by Starbucks for $65 million, and then we're going to take over World Athletics, and we're going to start those processes, get those contracts
wipe
out.
Everything out.
Yeah.
Stormed the wherever the offices are.
Yeah.
We're in control now.
Yeah, we're going to do that, and we're going to send out all these contracts to every athlete, doesn't matter nation, sex, or color.
You'd be surprised at how many athletes would probably sign that without reading it.
Yeah.
Maybe you wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised. I would hope they would read it because I think there'd be benefits in there for them too. I also think it's crazy it's a lot of money, but I just think it's worth it in some ways. Health insurance. Some countries universal health insurance. My country fortunately has that option, but in the US, which is great training, great resources, you don't have that option if you're international or if you're over 26, is it? Over
26?
Yeah, so maybe the contract has, you can get this type of insurance. We're partnered or sponsored with Anthem Blue Cross.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love you to post a social media thing about them saying, I get health insurance from them. They're looking after my professional year. And you sign that contract every year. It's a yearly contract. I think that would be cool. Like it's not a 4-year deal where like this athlete doesn't run anymore. He's getting paid 50K. Kind of sucks. It's every year. It gets renegotiated.
One of our joke business models is buy an MRI machine and move it to Flagstaff and just rent it out.
Honestly, that's a brilliant idea. You'd make. I think you guys would make so much money, you'd leave the sport.
Just the city's bag MRI.
And you just have the kind of designed.
Yeah.
You have Chris's head on the side, you have your head on the other side, you have Carl on the other side.
And then it has Chris's podcast is what you...
yeah, what you listen to.
What you hooked into, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's a great idea.
It's a brilliant idea. I can't stop thinking about it.
Velus is the active recovery footwear brand that is designed to help you restore, revive, and re-energize before and after you train. They are launching two new styles to their recovery mix for spring 2024, the Active Slide and the Active Flip Collection. These active recovery sandals are super lightweight and equipped with Velus's three-part tri-motion technology. They cradle your heel with impact-absorbing foam that cushions your feet with every step. It's got amazing arch support and forefoot flex that allows your fatigued feet and toes to stretch and relax. Velus is focused on helping athletes recover faster before and after you train so you can get after your next run performing at your best. Run, recover, repeat with Velus. Enjoy a 20% discount by entering code SidiousMag20 at checkout at velusfootwear.com.
Of the three of you, who knows the most about track and field?
I think George. George is very knowledgeable about it. He usually doesn't like to correct us because he loves to watch us make mistakes. I think that's the whole point of the podcast. Morgan is quite knowledgeable too. I would say I'm the least. I'm good on social media. I pick up things on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm very good with numbers. Like, I'm usually good with the times or like when the record was broken or when it was set. But George is definitely the most knowledgeable.
Who would be, of the three of you, who would be the best coach?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a hard question. I think Morgan would be great, but I think George would be a great college coach. I think Morgan would be better professional coach. I think Morgan's much more of a mentor, the way he talks. He's got a Mike Smith kind of vibe where the way he talks and where he comprehends things and talks to you. And he also likes to teach you about life as well as running. I think that's great for professional runners because once you take a step away from college, it's not college anymore, it's work. George would be a great college coach because I think he'd have that aura around him. And I also think that I think he's very good at structuring things too. George is very, very good at spacing things out and also attending to other people's needs. He's very knowledgeable about his body, so he's very knowledgeable about the sport as well.
Who would be the worst coach?
Oh, me for sure. I think I would get too, I think I'm too emotional. I get too emotionally invested. And I think I would be way too I'd be way too eager to I'd watch my athlete crush too early in a workout and I get too excited about it, you know? I think that would be me. And I'd also be a bit like Ronnie. I know Ronnie does this. Ronnie's an amazing coach, so it's different for that. But he was, Ben Flanagan was telling me, he will at workout days, try and make them hang around or slow things down so we can just hang out with them. I think that would be me as well. Just prolong this workout and maybe just make the cool down longer or make them do a drill so I can still hang out and have a chat with them. I think that's why I would be maybe a bad coach because they'd get sick of me by then.
I think you can't get
sick of Ronnie. But
I think I'm in that camp too. All right, who on the team is the habitual one-stepper on the whole team?
Joe, for sure. Joe, but Joe's kind of he's kind of the leader of training. When he's not there, we always recognize and notice that he's very good at hitting the pace, setting the longer stuff for sure. He's very good at that. And when his presence is not there, it's definitely felt on regular runs and normal runs. So he's the one-stepper. But he's always feeling good, always feeling bad, and he two-steps you. So. But he's always nice to be one step by because you know he's crushing it.
Who's the best pacer on the team?
Oh, definitely not Yard.
So is Yard the worst?
Yard is the worst, 100%. Yard is 100% the worst. I mean, maybe he's gotten better now, but I remember early on, Dathan was like, okay, I need you guys to go out in 28. And then Yard checks the watch. He goes, 25? And starts laughing. And then me and Mario just going, Yard, what are you doing? And he's like, it just felt so easy. I think George, yeah. And Morgan. George and Morgan, very good pacers. I think they would have competitions on when they can hit exactly the point. Yeah, those two are very good at that.
Who's the most likely to ignore a Dathan pace assignment?
Oh, definitely Yard. Yeah, okay. Yard or me. I think everyone else is pretty on par with it. But yeah, we would definitely ignore it, particularly for the faster stuff, you'd ignore.
Last question for you. What is going to make a successful 2024 for you?
Honestly, just staying happy. I think my 2022 year, which is one of my most successful years, I was miserable mentally. I was dealing with a lot of garbage in my head, a lot of head noise, as my brother would call it. But I think the great thing about where I am right now is that I've learned a lot about myself and my team and what I do, because I know that this isn't reality. This is a normal job. My dad's working at as aviation security, wakes up at 3 a.m. He's 62 years old. He hates his job. But he'll call me every day and he's excited about a session or a run or chatting about different things about the sport. And that makes me realize that this isn't reality. This isn't going to last long. I might as well just enjoy it and put myself in a position with people that make me happy. And if I'm happy and I'm healthy, I'm going to be pretty dangerous. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ollie. And good luck.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers. Yeah. Take care. Brush your hair.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this episode. I love doing this for you guys, so please do me a favor and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That helps us grow the show and get even more awesome guests. Let me know what you're enjoying about the show. Make sure you're subscribed or following on your favorite podcast players. Please share this episode with your friends if you think that they'll get any value or inspiration out of it. Let's build this thing together. Visit CityofSmack.com for a lot more. We've got a brand new website with tons more articles, videos, and podcasts. As always, I love track and field. I'm Chris Chavez. See you next time.